But to place what we're talking about in its international perspective, we're very pleased to invite Katharina Rack to address us. Thank you, Katharina.
Yeah, it finally works. Oh yeah, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, dear Brian, I'm very grateful and thank you for the invitation. I'm very excited and happy to be here and join the launch event of Creative Commons, of the New Zealand Creative Commons licenses. When we spoke just last night, we remembered that we signed the MOU in February, and New Zealand always has been one of my favorite projects because the work with Brian and with the legal team has been such a pleasure, and I've never seen a team just being so responsive on the email correspondence and being so active and being so with a lot of new ideas and with great, it was just a great communication. I just wanted to mention that. Thank you very much. Okay, I think that a lot of topics that I wanted to talk about have already been mentioned in all these great talks today, and I'm just running through my slides very quickly, and if you have any questions, then let's stop and move on with the questions, because I think that the questions are the most important part here. So what I mentioned earlier, I work for Creative Commons, but I work for the International Project. And what does the International Project mean? The International Project is a part of Creative Commons, it's part of the legal entity. We started it in 2003, and our office is unfortunately not in the US, but in Berlin, which happened as a kind of accident because I think Christiane Aschenfeld, whom I'm the successor of by running this project, she wanted to live in Berlin. So that's kind of confusing always because people don't really understand that we are working on the International Project and not on the CC Germany project. And so I hope this is kind of clearer. And just to briefly mention the iCommons project, which was mentioned earlier today, which is more about working with the community and all the projects that are using Creative Commons licenses. They are located in Johannesburg, which makes it even more complicated. But so we are all together Creative Commons right now, and the headquarters is located in San Francisco. That's maybe important to know. So what is the International Project doing? Our work and project can be described as following. We work with legal experts from all over the world to establish and maintain the international license architecture of Creative Commons. That means that the core Creative Commons licenses are adapted to the national jurisdictions. That's what we call the license porting. And why are we doing this? When we first started Creative Commons, or when Creative Commons was started, it turned out that so many people are interested in using the Creative Commons licenses, and the original version was drafted according to the US copyright law. And then the question came up, what happened if I use the US copyright license in another jurisdiction, for example, Germany? Can it be upheld in court? Will it be valid? Is it a good idea to use this license, or what can we do? And that's when we started to adapt the original US license to the different national copyright legislations. So while working on this license porting project, we are creating an international network of copyright experts, and that's one of the most exciting parts of working for Creative Commons, this network of great people whom I can just ask and send an email and ask questions, and we are ending up in a great discussion about specific legal topics, which is a lot of fun, and it's really great, and I'm happy to have these great new members like Susie and Andrew in the team, and I'm looking forward to working with you on new legal questions. Okay, so with this team and with this legal experts, we are coordinating also working groups for specific legal research on the licenses. For example, moral rights, collecting societies, and stuff like that. And we are also collaborating with the EU and the WIPO. So for the license porting procedure itself, we have developed guidelines which each participating jurisdiction works with. This has turned out to be a good instrument to assure a kind of structured process and a high quality product in the end, the national licenses. I'm sure that you all know how this works because New Zealand has just done it, but let me just run very quickly through it. So the first step is to identify and choose an affiliate institution and a project lead who would take over responsibility of the whole project and specifically the legal work. The project lead then develops a first draft of the license, and this license is then discussed publicly on the Creative Commons Worldwide website, which we have also done with New Zealand, of course. We are then, based on this public discussion, we are then working on a second draft, and we discuss the substantial legal changes again. And if all technical requirements are met, then we finally celebrate the launch of the licenses like today. So up to date, we are in contact with about 80 countries worldwide, and 41 countries have launched the national version. So New Zealand is the 41st, to be clear on this. We have formalized relationships with more than 50 legal affiliate institutions, which have all signed the porting agreement, the MOU, and we are also very proud to collaborate with excellent institutions, not only like the Berkman Center, but also the Council for the Humanities on this project. If you have a look on our website, you will find that 6 countries are in the so-called public discussion right now, and will hopefully move forward to the next step within the next month. I think it makes sense if we go back to the licenses itself. I really like the way you explained the difference between the licenses with the commercial element and the non-commercial element, and what it means. We have heard a lot of this, but I think it's important to emphasize and make clear what is behind the licenses and how we work with these. Creative Commons works in 3 layers on the licenses, which means that the licenses are expressed in 3 different formats, because we realized that 3 different things read the licenses. We have the Creative Commons so-called deed. That's a kind of human readable version, which means it's very easily to understand. We have the logo, the link, and the metadata. That's the machine readable version. And we finally have the licenses, the legal contract behind it, what we have already talked about it. So the legal contract is only one part of the licenses. And right now we have 6 different licenses, which have already been mentioned, so I'm just showing them briefly here. It's the attribution, non-commercial attribution, non-commercial share-alike, attribution, non-commercial no derivatives, attribution share-alike, and attribution. In practice, if you want to use a Creative Commons license, you need to go to our Creative Commons website. I have to apologize at this point for using these old slides. About 4 weeks ago, we have released a fresh design of our website, and I haven't had a chance to refresh the slides as well. So it will look a little different if you go to our website tonight, but it's only the design. It's the structure and the function of the license chooser is still the same. So on our website, you will find how to publish your work by using a Creative Commons license. Depending on your browser settings, you are able to see the page where you choose your license in your national language. And it's very easy. You just have to answer a few questions. The first one is, do you want to allow commercial use of your work? And in this example that I'm showing you right now, I say, yeah, I'm not really sure about that. I feel more comfortable without permission of commercial use, so I choose no. And the second question is, do I want to allow others to create derivative works? And in my example, I choose yes. So I'm choosing the attribution non-commercial share-alike. And how does it look like in the end? It's very quickly. So when you have desired your, when you have chosen your desired options, the Creative Commons website leads you to a license that reflects your preferences. And this is the so-called Commons deed. It's the human readable version. And from the human readable version, you can click on through the legal code. It's the legal contract, which we have just heard about details. And what you can't see, but what probably the technical geeks can see, is the machine readable version, the metadata. So just for an overview, to give you an example, this is how the internationalization process looks like. We have the three layers again, and that only the legal code is adapted to the different jurisdictions. We have also heard earlier this morning what kind of license is the most popular right now, and the most popular still is the attribution non-commercial share alike, but we are also happy to see that people are tending to be a little more flexible. So people are tending to use a Creative Commons license which permits derivative works as well. So you can see it here. Okay, so for the legal code and what basically the international project is doing by adapting the licenses to the different jurisdiction, you can summarize the following topics which have been turned out to be necessary to do research about and talk about when we adapt the license to a new jurisdiction. The first one to be mentioned are changes which are based on the differences between the common copyright law and the continental droit d'auteur. So moral rights and neighboring rights are therefore included in some of the licenses. Secondly, you will find changes due to mandatory provisions of the national code and contract law and consumer protection laws, which is, for example, the case in Germany. And furthermore, we had to amend the licenses with regards of law of collecting societies, which is also different in the different jurisdictions. And finally, the national language is also required by law in some jurisdictions to make the licenses to be upheld in court. So this shows how important it is to not only make the legal work, but also do the literary translation to the into the national language. So the national discussions also feed into a new version of the Creative Commons licenses. And right now, it was also mentioned earlier this morning, we are working on we have released the new version 3.0, and we are working on adapting most of the jurisdiction licenses or the already existing jurisdiction licenses to be upgraded to 3.0. So the first main issue which needs to be mentioned when we talk about version 3.0 is further internationalization. When Creative Commons International started, the US license was used as a kind of generic license, meaning whenever a new jurisdiction wanted to start a project, they used the US license as a kind of template, as a generic license. And also, when people or creators in a jurisdiction where Creative Commons has not been ported a national version of the license wanted to use Creative Commons licenses, they used the US license. So with a new version 3.0, we developed a truly generic license, which is not based on the US copyright law, but is really drafted to be international, and the language is based on international treaties such as the WIPO copyright treaty and the Berne Convention and other international treaties. So that's one of the main important things to know about version 3.0. Another very important outcome of the discussion is that we are talking about further international harmonization in view of moral rights and collecting societies. So right now we have a new discussion about the version 3.0 and the moral rights, how we drafted this, because it turned out that there's a slightly a part which can be easily misunderstood. So we are working on a new, but this also shows that Creative Commons is a kind of ongoing project, and it lives because we are doing research again, and we learn from some not really mistakes, but we are it's an ongoing process. Okay, so what you can see from the foregoing slides, our work of the license porting process in different jurisdictions aims at the enforceability of Creative Commons licenses in national courts. So Creative Commons licenses so far have been in two different cases that have to be mentioned, one in the Netherlands and another one in Spain. And another very important question for the future, and this was brought up also earlier today when someone mentioned the GNU license of the FSF. So one other very important topic is the interoperability of open content licenses in general, because only this will ensure a growing and usable pool of open content in the internet. We have already talked about this Curry Court case, so I'm not sure if it makes sense to go through the whole thing again, but this is the quotation of the court. Maybe that's of interest for you, what the court in the end stated, and I think that we mentioned that Curry finally won the case, and the court stated that that the license element, specifically the non-commercial license element, was not required, was not complied with, thinking in German and the jet lag, and then was not complied with. So I think this shows very good how Creative Commons licenses can be upheld in a national court and how it can be done successfully. Finally, I want to give another very popular example of how Creative Commons licenses can be used. It's the area of education, and this project is, from my personal point of view, one of the most interesting and useful projects, and I assume that a lot of people already know this. It's the MIT Open Courseware Initiative. It was started in 2001, and the project aims at a free and open digital publication of high-quality materials organized as courses. So MIT provides access to MIT course materials for educators, students, self-learners around the world to use and reuse. And for realizing this idea, a flexible licensing approach was needed. And today, the MIT is working with the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike license. But it's not only MIT. Also, the Rice University could be mentioned here. In 2003, they started their own project. It's called Connections. And the Connection project provides a free scholarly materials or free software tools to create an online environment for collaboratively freely sharing and rapidly publishing scholarly content. So the Connection project is more kind of online library. The biggest issue here to deal with was similar to the MIT Open Courseware project, the question, how can we license content in a way that left it open and dynamic, but still offers a kind of protection? And to meet with these extremely free approaches, the Connection project works with the attribution license. So it's the broadest license. We heard this earlier this morning. Up to date, many similar projects like these MIT and Connection have started all over the world, and you will find most of them being connected in the Open Courseware Consortium. And I just briefly wanted to mention this website because I think it's a very important project. And what does this has to do with Creative Commons, and what is Creative Commons doing in the area of education? This is something else I would like to mention in this audience, because we started a new project, CC Learn, which is a division of Creative Commons and which is dedicated to realizing the full potential of the internet to support learning and open educational resources. The mission here is to minimize barriers to sharing and reuse of educational materials, legal barriers, but also technical barriers and social barriers. So the project CC Learn has been launched over the summer 2007. With a great support from the Hewlett Foundation, and you will find details if you're interested on our website. There's a special link to it. So this is just the people who founded it and the idea. Okay, one last sentence before I finish. I want to mention our early yearly conference, which was also mentioned earlier this year, the so-called iSummit. This year, the iSummit was held in Croatia. And besides a lot of exciting and very interesting workshops and discussions with artists, educators, and other users of the Creative Commons licenses, we also organized a so-called Legal Day. The Legal Day was a specific session for project leads and affiliates to discuss legal topics of the licenses. So what we have discussed in Croatia was basically the version 3.0 and the implementation in the national versions. We also discussed questions of international private law, which we did not really go into detail, but which is a great topic if you have different national licenses. We discussed the language of the collecting societies. It was also being given a presentation about statistics and global growth. And we also had a session on future versioning and strategies. So for next year, we are planning to have the special CCI, or Creative Commons International Affiliates workshop again, and we would like maybe extend it a little and see what needs to be discussed for the next steps. So I encourage you, if you have any ideas or if you're interested, please send me an email, and of course a special invitation to the legal team. If there's anything we need to discuss, please contact me and let me know. Thank you very much.
We do have 5 minutes before lunch. Does anybody? Yes.
It's just one question. It's probably my ignorance. Could you explain the term collective societies, please?
They're collecting societies are organisations like APRA or AMCOS who have been either had copyright works assigned to them or licensed to them by the copyright owner, and they're authorised to go out and collect commercial royalties. So another one is Copyright Licensing Limited for literary works.
Katerina,
is this on? Yes. Katerina, I'm teaching and researching at Victoria University Digital Design, in particular looking at Creative Commons and open source in Second Life, the virtual world. And I know that Lawrence Lessig advised Linden Labs on the setup of the company. There has been some discussion of incorporating CC into the client software. I'm just wondering about jurisdiction. When you create something in a virtual world, what jurisdiction would that come under?
Well, that's a very good question. I have to admit that I'm not so familiar with Second Life, so I prefer to live in the reality, probably. No, kidding. I mean, that's a very good question. The jurisdiction licenses should be used if you are in the real world, because then it makes sense, right? But for the Second Life, I would, at first glance, I would suggest, okay, that's maybe the area for the unported, what we have right now, right? For the international license, which covers all different jurisdictions. But, I mean, maybe one day, Second Life will be developed and we will have also different jurisdictions within, Second Life, and then maybe we can think about what license should be used then.
There's a lot of legal research into the jurisdiction question, because it, in a sense, Second Life is a second generation jurisdiction issue with regard to digital things, and the first generation is very far from sorted. So there's a lot of international negotiation on appropriate agreement over private law, the international comment that was made, and there's a lot of disagreement on it, a lot of paper on it, but if you'd like to research it, I can send you some links sometime. But essentially, there is a woman at Monash called Melissa de Swartz who has suggested in particular that although something is created in the Second Life, you create it in the jurisdiction you name in your Second Life, and that may have a tie to a court jurisdiction or not.
Hello, Lee Blackwell from Otago Polytechnic again. Katerina, I'm pleased you brought up the Open Educational Resources projects. Just to localise that a bit, deep down in the south, it's hard to get noticed up here in the north, and the Otago Polytechnic has launched a new IP policy, which adopts by default the Creative Commons Attribution License, no share alike, no none of that further restrictions. I think that establishes us as the first educational organisation in Australia and New Zealand. Just to put real money on that gesture, the Otago Polytechnic has for the past 12 months been developing its resources on the Wiki Educator platform. We've had some issues. We've probably invested approximately $40,000 to $60,000 in professional development for staff as well as resource production. But one of the issues has already been, and probably unresolved, and it's hard to get this in a few sentences, but they use the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license. We use the Creative Commons Attribution license. There is a slight compatibility issue because if we were to put our resources onto a share alike platform, that means that we can't take our resources off that platform and use them in a context that may require either restriction or more liberalisation of the resource. So we're obviously having that out with the Wiki Educator facilitators, but probably a platform through the CC Learn initiative to debate that and flesh that out would be good.
Hi there, Andy Neal from the National Library. Just a follow-up really to those last two questions. There's a situation at the moment with Flickr, and there's no options to choose any international, any ported licenses. And I mean, Andrew, we've spoken a little bit about this, but I'm just interested in the panel's view that if a New Zealander uploads a photo to, say, Flickr and uses the unported, which I believe is 2.5 at the moment, okay, so on Flickr it's 2.5 then, so it's not. Yeah, they haven't upgraded it. So what would happen if there was abuse of some kind, either overseas or New Zealand? How would that be how would that be resolved?
Well, I mean, the first point is that probably we should. Flickr. It would be better if Flickr just first of all uses then the correct unported 3.0, and then secondly, if there's a chance to give the option to use different jurisdiction licenses as well. But that's something that I take with me home, and we will hopefully work on that. Is that what you?
Well, I mean, I guess given the situation today, if New Zealand uploaded a photo under the current situation and someone in, Australia ripped off that photo or something, what would be the recourse? How would that apply?
Well, that's a question of international private law then. I mean, that's a question of, first, you can divide it in two different questions maybe. The first question is which license will be applicable, and the second one is which national law will be applicable. And the first question should be answered: if you use the unported license, then of course the unported license is the one we are talking about. And the question which national law will be applicable, if we just start discuss this right now, then we will probably not be finished by tonight, because it's a very, it's very interesting, but it's a research topic. But just in short, you can say that if you are located, probably if you are located in New Zealand, for example, then this is very likely that the New Zealand copyright law will be applicable. So that means that the court has to make the decision in view of the unported license, but in the background of the New Zealand Copyright Act. Does it make sense? Do you want?
I was just going to add a little bit on the jurisdiction issue. It's something that people like to get stuck into. I have to admit, my brother and I and another woman actually wrote a book on the entire topic of jurisdiction in the internet in 2004. In the most recent book we've done, we've actually also got a chapter, which is about 100 pages on jurisdiction in the internet. But to actually make it even simpler, what I would actually just like to point out is that in these questions with these online spaces, in fact, the issue of which law will apply to a dispute is often there in the fine print. These are actually spaces that are created under contract. So when you go into Second Life, or when you go into most of these websites where you can upload material, you're actually doing so under the terms of use that are actually set out there on the website. And if you go into the fine print, you'll probably find that it says, in the event of dispute, okay, between you and Flickr, it will actually be resolved under the law of this jurisdiction. There may even be issues about whether you may even find, if those terms of use are silent about disputes between users, you then come back into this very complex area of private international law or law under which you would determine whose jurisdiction's law applies, et cetera, et cetera. But I just wanted to point out that we've actually just completed yet another report for the Queensland Government. Queensland Government is looking at the use of spaces like Second Life, YouTube, MySpace, and we've actually worked through just about all the legal issues that we can think of, and they're going to be similar to what you'll find here in New Zealand. That report, which is like about a 150-page report, but it's actually written in fairly simple kind of language for non-lawyers, that will actually be uploaded on one of our websites pretty soon. We've just gotten permission to actually make that public. So that's formed the basis of this Queensland Government's policy and practices on use of these online spaces.
Thank you, Anne. I think... all right, when's the last one?
Another question for Dr. Fitzgerald. I just wondered, what is the solution, or what, is there any impact on Creative Commons from the free trade agreement that Australia signed with the US?
Oh, okay. I think actually free trade agreement with the US, absolutely. I mean, I think it becomes much more important to actually identify what copyright rights you have got, and for people to, you know, to make it clear, because the thing is, one of the big risks that we've got now that we've got this really amazingly strong copyright protection system, where you've not only got civil, the ordinary civil infringements, but as I mentioned earlier, a whole barrage, an amazingly strong armoury of criminal enforcement provisions, some of which are actually strict liability. So essentially, you can be fined $1,000 for infringing someone else's copyright in a whole range of contexts, a lot of which you would actually think would be pretty innocent kind of uses. So the use of CC licenses and understanding what material you can use without infringing, I think, becomes just of paramount importance. That's one of the points that I was actually trying to get at. That is one of the big issues. That great advantage of Creative Commons is that it enables this large and very fast expanding pool of material that's there to be accessed and reused, and you know the basis on which you can reuse it without infringing. So increasingly, people who are wanting to build on existing works, incorporate them into their own work, are going to go to this body of Creative Commons badge works, which they can clearly use without fear of infringement.
Thank you. Now we might stop here. I think we've got time for lunch. All right then.
Tēnā koe, Katerina. My question, you talked about your international contacts with the international experts. Within that, and the 80 countries that you mentioned, how many, could you tell me, how did you collaborate with Indigenous people in those countries? Or were there indeed any Indigenous experts within your number of experts in those countries? Kia ora.
Well, I have to admit that I'm focusing on working on the porting process itself. So we are working with the legal teams, right? So I'm not really sure what you expect me to...
I'm just wondering whether within your in your field that the Indigenous perspectives have come in on board in terms of the copyright commons and mm-hmm. etc.
Well, I mean, they are then integrated in the team as well, right? So they are of course then part of the work on the license porting process.
Great. Well, I'm just thinking, well, hopefully there's been some Indigenous information you've got there as well.
I, like many of you, have only met our International Creative Commons expert today, so my comment is not really in relation to her project. But one of the slides that Katerina was forced to go through at great and very eloquent speed mentioned the liaison with the World Intellectual Property Organization. And I think that is Katerina will know more details, but to my mind that immediately springs out as a very important link with Indigenous peoples, because the work within that organisation under the auspices of the Traditional Knowledge Project has direct voices of Indigenous peoples involved in it. So I suspect that if you haven't already developed that link in that context, that's a really good place to start.
Thank you, Susie. Now, just before asking you to thank the panel, I'd like just to make one other comment to do with the website. Some of you will have looked at the Creative Commons Australia, Aotearoa New Zealand website, and you will know that it's a very basic site at present. You might not know that the Digital Strategy Community Partnership Fund has provided funding for the development of the second stage, which is to become then a much more dynamic and interactive site. One of the things we're hoping for from this meeting, and this morning's discussions have already justified that hope in a variety of ways, we're hoping that the next stage of this discussion today, which is the workshops, will allow you in more focused sector or interest group areas to identify more of the issues that need to be placed on the agenda for development of Creative Commons in New Zealand. One of those issues, of course, is the question whether there should be an Indigenous Creative Commons licence, and it was decided early on that it was appropriate to explore that question in New Zealand. The answer may well be there doesn't need to be one, but we don't know that, and one of the purposes of that workshop today is to begin the process of inquiring whether one of the distinctive contributions Creative Commons Aotearoa New Zealand could make to the international movement is the formation of an Indigenous licence. More generally, though, what I'm suggesting about the workshops, and by the way, we have decided, because of people raising this question, that if there will be an education sector workshop, if you wish to join one, so there'll be space to put your names in for that outside after you leave this room. It is really important that the group developing Creative Commons in New Zealand has as much interaction with the community of interest represented by yourselves today as possible, and that the website in particular becomes a proper vehicle for the identification of issues and discussion of development lines that are both significant for this country, because after all we are a distinctive locality within the international community, but also significant for international evolution in some of the ways that Katerina has described. So from the workshops in particular, we're hoping to gather up information about themes and interests that may have sector relation, may have much more general relationship to what we might do in the future. It would also have bearing upon plans for workshops in other parts of the country, because as you're aware, the purpose of the site and the development is to promote and educate in respect of the purposes of Creative Commons. We'll be looking for partners for those workshops out of Wellington. Please keep in touch as the process develops. Would you please now join me in thanking our panel for a very important session.